Please welcome back Assistant Professor of Dermatology at Penn State Hershey Medical Center, Dr. Amy Green.
You guys ready to get into our intermediate session? All right. Okay, so we're going to hop right in. No disclosures again. So the goals here, we're going to briefly review the dermoscopic core knowledge that we reviewed last time. But we're pretty quickly going to delve into cases of common clinical scenarios and how we can use dermoscopy to really help with some challenging differentials. And then lastly, we're going to review pigmented lesions of the face, which is a lot of people's nemesis, and they're really challenging. So this is just a review slide here of the dermoscopic core competencies for those of you who weren't in the last lecture, where we went over the specific dermoscopic criteria of these common lesions. And the main takeaway from reviewing these is we need to remember that each specific structure within the diagnosis of nevus, dermatofibroma, basal cell carcinoma, squamous cell carcinoma, seborrheic keratosis, or angioma needs to be taken in context with the other features within the lesion, as well as the clinical context and the history, right? So we're not going to spend too much time on this because you guys are now intermediate dermoscopists. So you have either been to the last course or you use dermoscopy in your daily practice. So we're going to jump right into a case here today. So this is a young female. She's 30 years old. She's had about 4 melanomas on this leg, and she comes in with this brown spot. I do full skin checks every 2-3 months for her. And we have this spot right here. So what is your differential when you look at this spot? When I think of this spot, it's a young female, and it clinically is brown. It doesn't look stuck on. It doesn't look like a seborrheic keratosis. It's not firm. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, is this a melanocytic nevus? She has a bunch of them. She has over 100 melanocytic nevi. She's had multiple melanomas. And then when you think of a melanocytic nevus, you always have to think, is this a melanoma? So this is what it looks like dermoscopically. So what are we seeing feature-wise? So I see globules. Are they regular or irregular? Oh, they look pretty regular to me. They're evenly distributed throughout the lesion, right? So you could think, is this a globular type pattern nevus? But remember, where are you supposed to find globular pattern nevi? Where are they the most common? Cephalad distribution, right? So neck, head, neck, chest, proximal arms. This is on her leg. And so we have to remember location and clinical context, right? It's what you could consider a benign nevus pattern, but it's not in a totally normal location, so it's on her leg. And this is what the rest of her nevi looked like on her leg, right? So this didn't look like that. It stuck out. So I biopsy it because of her history and because of how it looked compared to her other nevi, and it was an atypical Spitz tumor. So Spitz nevi and Spitz tumors are controversial tumors in itself, and that's because clinically, dermoscopically, and even histologically, it can be really, really challenging to differentiate them from a Spitzoid melanoma, and it's hard to classify what their malignant potential is, right? When you think of the dermoscopy of Spitz nevi, you split them up into non-pigmented and pigmented Spitz. So a non-pigmented Spitz is a classic pink papule in a child. And when you look at it under dermoscopy, it has these dotted or globular vessels that are distributed symmetrically throughout the lesion. And it can also have what we call negative, so you have this pigment depigmentation or reticular depigmentation. And that's these white lines that kind of go in between the vessels. For pigmented Spitz, the most common dermoscopic pattern of a pigmented Spitz is either a starburst pattern, so you guys have probably heard of that. And that's where you have these pseudopods, but instead of it just being asymmetrically off a lesion, which is a melanoma-specific feature, it's circumferentially around the entire lesion, classic for a Spitz or a Reed's nevus. And then you can have a globular pattern as well. When you have a globular pattern, they can vary in size and color, and they also can you can see the globular pattern with this reticular depigmentation, and that's these white lines that go in between the globules. So this is a good case to remember what we talked about in terms of, even though it may fit into a benign nevus pattern, it is not in the right location and it didn't match her other nevi, so you have to take everything within clinical context, right? All right, so we're gonna delve into pink lesions on the face today. We're gonna start with a case here. This is a 50-year-old female. She comes in with this pink papule on her face. I ask her how long it's been there, and she doesn't really know how long it's been there. I think when we start out, we are always, you know, we always trust the patient, and that's great, and oftentimes they can help us, but sometimes when they say it's been there forever, don't worry about it, it's a skin cancer, right? And then, so it doesn't always help, you know, so you always have to have some sort of clinical suspicion. So when you think of a pink papule on the face, when I think about a pink papule on the face, my three most common differentials that come to my mind is, is this an intradermal nevus? Is this a basal cell carcinoma? Or is this sebaceous hyperplasia? Because those are three common things that you can find on the face. Sometimes it's easy. You come in, a patient comes in, he's like, I've had that since I was young. He's got hair coming out of it. It's soft, it's fleshy. You look at it under the dermatoscope and it's confirmed. You see your comma-shaped vessels. You don't see anything concerning for your basal cell carcinoma, and it's an intradermal nevus. Or this patient who, from the door, you walk in and you're like, okay, you have a basal cell on your nose. Doc, it's been bleeding forever, it's growing. You probably didn't need dermoscopy to diagnose that, right? But you stick your dermatoscope on it anyway, and you see these beautiful arborizing vessels and these shiny white lines, confirms your diagnosis of a basal cell. But it's not always that easy. So then this is much more common, right? Where you have a patient who comes in, he has a history of multiple non-melanoma skin cancers. He's got several pink papules on his face, no idea how long they've been there. And this is where dermoscopy really is useful. So let's go back to our differential. Intradermal nevus, basal cell carcinoma, and sebaceous hyperplasia. So intradermal nevi, they have different dermoscopy criteria than your benign melanocytic nevi. And when you think of intradermal nevi, there's two types, your unna's nevus and your Meescher's nevus. So an unna's nevus is a fleshy, mammillated papule. It's most commonly found on your trunk and extremities. If you stick a dermatoscope on it and rock that dermatoscope back and forth, the unna's nevus goes with it. It's called the wobble sign. It's nice and cute. The Meescher's nevus tends to be a little bit more dome-shaped, a little bit more firm, most common on the face, so we're gonna focus on that today. And it's got some classic dermoscopy features to it. So a Meescher's nevus, it can be either, it can have pigment or it doesn't have to have pigment, right? If it has pigment, the pigment is normally just in the background of the skin, so you kind of see that here, or it can be in the form of globules. There's multiple different vessel patterns that can be associated with intradermal nevi, but most of the vessels are a little bit fuzzier than basal cell carcinoma, a little bit more out of focus, and a little bluer than basal cell carcinoma. The classic vascular pattern in intradermal nevi is a comma-shaped nevus. It has a positive predictive value of about 94% for an intradermal nevus. This is an example of an intradermal nevus where it doesn't have any vessels to it. You can see the pigment here, and you can see pigment in the background of the skin, and then pigment in the globules here. So this is a classic example of an intradermal nevus. So let's compare that again to basal cell carcinoma. So clinically, basal cell carcinoma is a little bit more firm than an intradermal nevus. It's a little shinier and a little pearlier, but sometimes it can be really challenging to differentiate the two, especially when your intradermal nevus is a little bit more firm. And so we go back to our classic dermoscopy features of basal cell carcinoma. So basal cell carcinoma, the dermoscopy features of basal cell carcinoma has the highest specificity for this tumor, right? We've done a lot of research on the dermoscopy and its correlation with basal cell. And so we'll review these today, we'll review this now. We went over it in our last lecture. And so we have our arborizing vessels. So again, those are your, you have the thicker trunk, you have those finer telangiectasias emanating from them. These vessels surround basaloid tumor islands. You see arborizing vessels in nodular basal cells. So there's been also a lot of research with dermoscopy on differentiating the subtypes of basal cell, which can be helpful, especially when you're thinking about treatment. For superficial basal cell carcinoma, the vessels are not as well developed, so you're going to get more of these wispy, fine telangiectasias. They still tend to be sharply in focus, and they still tend to be bright red, which differentiates it from an intradermal nevus that has a little bit more fuzzy vessels. You have your spokewheel-like structures and your leaf-like structures. These are going to be seen in your superficial basal cell carcinoma, remember. You have these bulbous projections, either encircling a central darker area or without that. Your blue-gray ovoid nests and your blue-gray dots and globules, which are going to be your basaloid tumor islands in the dermis, so they're going to be seen in nodular basal cell carcinoma. Your shiny white lines and your ulceration. So basal cell carcinoma ulcerates really easily. We talked about this in the last lecture. And intradermal nevi really shouldn't ulcerate unless there's known trauma to them. Right? So that's another thing that can be helpful in differentiating. If you see an ulceration and the patient has no recollection of any injury to that area, that's concerning. There's a newer entity that has been described within the last year called May globules, or multiple aggregated yellow-white globules. And it is seen in about 20% of basal cell carcinoma, so on par with the spokewheel-like structures and the leaf-like structures. But it has a very high positive predictive value in the 90s for basal cell carcinoma. And interestingly, it's found more commonly in the higher risk subtypes of basal cell carcinoma. So if you're, again, thinking about treatment when you're doing biopsies of basal cell, if you're someone who has a patient who comes in and you biopsy and scrape a lot of their superficial basal cell carcinomas, if you're seeing May globules in a basal cell, you might want to hold off on that treatment, get the biopsy, because it's much more associated with those higher risk subtypes, so it can help dictate treatment. May globules can sometimes be confused. You might look at these and say, hey, they look like milia-like cysts and seborrheic keratoses. So milia-like cysts are in the stratum corneum, remember, so they're going to be much more visible on non-polarized dermoscopy versus polarized dermoscopy. When you toggle between polarized and non-polarized, those milia-like cysts are going to blink up at you, kind of like stars in the night. May globules can be seen with both, and they don't change, so that's a way to help differentiate those. So differentiating an intradermal nevus and a basal cell carcinoma, there's several key features that can be helpful. The pigment in an intradermal nevus can be not within a structure. It can just be in the background skin, right? If it's going to be in a structure, it's going to be within a globule. Basal cell carcinoma never has pigment just in the background skin. It's always going to be within a structure. Blue-gray ovoid nest, leaf-like structure, all right? So that's going to be a way to differentiate. Ulceration is another key thing. So like we said, intradermal nevi shouldn't ulcerate. Basal cell ulcerates very easily. There's this idea of the hair sign, and so you might have heard of the hair sign being like, if hair grows out of it, it's nothing to worry about. That is not true, unfortunately, but where it came from is probably when people were looking at differentiating intradermal nevi from basal cell carcinoma. Basal cell carcinoma very rarely has hair growing out of it versus an intradermal nevus where it's common. You can see hair grow out of a melanoma, so it doesn't, just because hair grows out of it doesn't mean it's benign, but it can help differentiate these two. Although I will tell you that I have seen basal cell carcinoma with terminal hair growing out of it in the scalp. Another thing that has been described is this kind of brown halo. So a brown halo that can be around an intradermal nevus. You're not going to see that with basal cell. And one of the biggest things is the vessels. So the crispness and the red arborizing vessels in a basal cell carcinoma is very, very specific. The intradermal nevus vessels are going to be much more fuzzy. They're going to be around the periphery, and that can be a helpful clue to differentiate them. The other differentials, sebaceous hyperplasia. So clinically, these can be easy to diagnose clinically, but sometimes they can be confusing for basal cell carcinoma. They're going to be these yellow, pink kind of greasy papules. Oftentimes, there's multiple spots. Dermoscopically, they also have classic criteria. So you're going to have vessels too. They're called crown vessels. They start at the periphery, they emanate towards the center, and they surround these yellow-white globules called cumulus structures. So you see these are the cumulus structures. Here's your crown vessels. Those crown vessels do not cross midline. Unlike a basal cell carcinoma, your arborizing vessels very frequently cross midline, so that can be a helpful differentiating factor. So armed with that knowledge, we go back to our patient who has two spots that he's concerned about here, one in his alar groove and one on his cheek. So which one do we want to biopsy? Raise your right hand if you want to biopsy the right. Good. Do you want to biopsy the left? Great. So you see your arborizing vessels in this basal cell carcinoma. You see these nice crown vessels, these beautiful cumulus structures in your sebaceous hyperplasia. Now this is as much a clinical pearl as it is a dermoscopy pearl. But you always want to stretch the skin, especially in our elderly patients that have the redundancy of skin when you're doing your clinical exam. I think if you're going quick, you could have easily missed this spot right here. You want to make sure you stretch the skin. It's going to allow you to see the pearliness of some of the tumors. It's also going to give you a flat base, so when you stick your dermatoscope on it and see these lovely arborizing vessels, you're able to catch those basal cells really early. So a clinical pearl, always stretch the skin, allows you to easily stick your dermatoscope on it and see kind of some of the clinical clues that can help you differentiate. All right, so going back to our index case here, this pink papule on this 50-year-old patient. Dermoscopically, we look at it. We do not see any arborizing vessels, right? It's a little bit traumatized, but you can see that there's pigment without any structure. You can see your comma-shaped vessels. This is an intradermal nevus. So this is a nice chart developed and borrowed from Dr. Kelly Nelson, really reviewing some of the features that can help differentiate these pink papules. So just to review this quickly, when we look at the vessel pattern, basal cell carcinoma, these arborizing vessels, they're going to cross midline most of the time. Your intradermal nevus, you have those comma-shaped vessels. You can have other shapes as well, but that's what's classically described. They're going to be fuzzier regardless of what they are, a little bit more blue compared to your basal cell carcinoma. And then your sebaceous hyperplasia, they have those crown vessels. These are vessels that are going to start at the periphery, emanate towards the center, surround these cumulus-like structures, but they aren't going to cross midline. Pigment in a basal cell carcinoma is always going to be within a structure. That's in contrast to an intradermal nevus where your pigment can be just in the background skin. So that can be a very helpful clue. And then basal cell carcinoma frequently ulcerates. You should not have ulceration in either of the benign entities unless there's known trauma to it. Remember the May globules, which can help you with basal cell carcinoma and can help you differentiate between maybe some of the subtypes of basal cell carcinoma. And then you get your cumulus sign, those yellow-white globules in your sebaceous hyperplasia. So let's test your knowledge real quick. Which one is a basal cell skin cancer? Ah, I love it, 100%. You guys are awesome. So your arborizing vessels, and what's the other lesion? Shout it out. I heard it, intradermal nevus. All right, how about this one? B again, basal cell carcinoma. So this is a great example of your May globules here. Do you guys see that? And you see multiple other features of your basal cell carcinoma. This one is your sebaceous hyperplasia. All right, pink and brown lesions. So this is an 85-year-old male. He's got a growing spot on his arm. He has a history of non-melanoma skin cancer as well as melanoma. Here is your dermoscopy image, both polarized and non-polarized. So when I think of pink and brown lesions, comes to my mind is this a melanoma or is this a basal cell carcinoma? So those are the two common diagnoses that can be confused when you're thinking of pink and brown, right? So a proportion of basal cell, about 7% of basal cell carcinomas, can have pigment in them such that when you look at them clinically, they can be concerning for a pigmented lesion and can be in the differential for melanoma. So this was a paper done by Dr. Rabinowitz and his colleagues looking at specifically dermoscopic criteria that could help differentiate pigmented basal cell carcinoma from melanoma or a benign melanocytic lesion. And they found 6 features that is highly specific for a basal cell carcinoma. And these are not a surprise to us. These are arborizing vessels, your blue-gray ovoid nest, your blue-gray dots and globules, your spoke wheel and leaf-like structures, and ulceration. And what they found is that they came up with a diagnostic algorithm. And their diagnostic algorithm said if there is absence of a pigment network, plus one of these 6 criteria, then it has a high sensitivity, so about 97% for it being a basal cell carcinoma, and the specificity was about 93%, so pretty good. So one of these 6 criteria and absence of a pigment network. So let's review some cases here. So you have a clinical pink-brown papule on this patient's back, and you look at it under dermoscopy, and several of these clues can point you towards the diagnosis of basal cell carcinoma over melanoma, right? So you see ulceration. So again, ulceration is very common in basal cell carcinoma. It happens about 30% of the time. It's not super common in melanoma. And when it does happen in melanoma, it tends to be more advanced melanoma, so deeper and larger melanomas, versus basal cell carcinoma, it happens when they're much smaller. So ulceration, and then you can see here your leaf-like and your spoke wheel-like structures. So 3 of those criteria, no pigment network. You also see your shiny white lines you can see in basal cell carcinoma. You can absolutely see shiny white lines in melanoma. It's subtle, but there are some differences in the shape of the shiny white lines. In the basal cell carcinoma, they're chunkier, and in melanoma, it's more kind of these short lines that are either parallel to each other or orthogonal to each other. Here's another example. So this is a brown spot, 2 millimeters on this guy's temple. He had a previous cryo there. And you biopsy it, or you do your dermoscopy image of it, and this is what you see. There's no vessels. There's really nothing else to help differentiate, right? But you can clearly see these blue-gray dots, your multiple blue dots and globules there, indicative of a basal cell carcinoma. Not any pigment network or anything like that. So this was a pigmented basal cell carcinoma. So here's another example of a pink-brown spot on this patient's back, and you see the dermoscopy image of it here. Another thing that can help differentiate these tumors is that in basal cell carcinoma, they're much more likely to have about 50 to 75% of the lesion devoid of pigment. So unlike melanoma, which has pigment really throughout the lesion, basal cell will have enough to make it clinically look brown, but it's not going to be the entire lesion, and you can see that here. So you see ulceration, again, a classic clue for basal cell carcinoma, and then you see some pigment here in its leaf-like structures off here, but most of the lesion is devoid of pigment, and that's unlike melanoma. All right. So we reviewed our melanoma structures in our last lecture, and we're going to quickly go through them again. And we're remembering, when we're talking about melanoma-specific structures, we're talking about non-glabrous skin and non-special sites. And both basal cell and melanoma, unfortunately, exhibit this architectural disorder. Architectural disorder, really, all malignancies have a propensity for architectural disorder, so you can't really rely on that. You're more reliant on differentiating between the melanoma-specific features and the features that are specific for basal cell carcinoma. So to review the melanoma-specific features, you have your atypical network. So that is going to be your network that has thicker lines, and it's not uniform in its color. Your focal streaks and pseudopods, those are your linear projections. Remember, we talked about those on your spitz nevus, but that's going to be circumferentially around the lesion versus melanoma. It's going to be off to one side. your negative network, which is going to be these white serpiginous lines that interconnect between these curvilinear or elongated globular brown structures, your shiny white lines. So we talked about how melanoma shiny white lines tends to be shorter lines. They tend to be parallel to each other or orthogonal, while the shiny white lines in basal cell carcinoma tend to be a little bit more chunkier, so blotches. Your atypical dots and globules, your off-center blotch, so that's going to be your hyperpigmented area that is going to be off-center from the lesion or multiple blotches in one lesion, your peripheral tan structureless areas, your atypical vasculature. So melanoma tends to make really funny vessels. Basal cell carcinoma vessels are going to be arborizing or they're going to be fine wispy telangiectasias. Melanoma are going to have multiple shape, serpentine vessels or squiggly vessels, dotted vessels, corkscrew vessels. They're going to be vessels and they're going to be all together. So a lot of times they have multiple different shapes versus basal cell carcinoma, which have those nice arborizing vessels. Your regression signs, so that's going to be your peppering, your blue-gray small kind of dots, and your scar-like white area, and then your blue-gray or your blue-white veil, which is again going to be over the palpable portion of the melanoma. So reviewing this again, this is an image that we reviewed in my first lecture. You see clearly this negative network here. So these are these white serpiginous lines that interconnect between these globular or elongated globular structures, your scar-like white area, your peppering down here, and then you have your atypical network. So this is a clinical image. When I first saw him, I was like, that's going to be a pigmented basal cell. To me, clinically, it looked like a pigmented basal cell. But when you put your dermatoscope on it, you clearly see pigment network. Remember, you don't see pigment network in a basal cell carcinoma. And the pigment network is very irregular, different, not uniform in terms of color. The thickness of the lines are different. So you see your irregular pigment network, you see your tan structureless areas, you see your regression signs. So these are all melanoma-specific features, and this was an invasive melanoma. Here's another example. This is a good example of pigment that is completely throughout the lesion, right? So basal cell carcinoma is much more likely to not have pigment throughout the entire lesion versus this melanoma. You can see the shiny white lines here. It gives a little bit of an example of how those can differentiate. It can be really challenging, but these shiny white lines tend to be parallel and orthogonal with each other. You're also seeing this blue-white veil. You're seeing really irregular dots and globules and these kind of linear streaks and almost pseudopod formation forming here. Melanoma-specific features, right? That was a 1.4 millimeter melanoma. So going back to our index case here, here's the dermoscopy of it. What are we seeing? So we're seeing atypical network, right? So up here, we clearly see pigment network, and it's atypical. Down here, you're seeing your shiny white structures. You're seeing atypical dots and globules off to the side here. You also, when you do non-polarized dermoscopy, the grayness of regression signs, so peppering, actually can be seen better with non-polarized dermoscopy. It's the color. You see how the color gray kind of picks up a little bit easier with non-polarized? So you can see your regression signs that pop up a little bit easier on non-polarized dermoscopy. So that was an invasive melanoma. So here's another chart reviewing those two entities. So reviewing the vessels, I think that this can be really helpful. Arborizing vessels for basal cell carcinoma, they're sharply in focus. They have a really high positive predictive value. When you're talking about superficial basal cell carcinoma, they're going to be more of those wispy telangiectasias. They're not as well developed, but still sharply in focus. For your melanoma, you're going to have these polymorphous vessels, so multiple vessels, dotted, squirrely, your serpentine vessels, kind of all in one lesion. Your pigment. So the pigment in a basal cell carcinoma is not going to be, it's much more common to not be diffusely throughout the lesion. So about 75% or 50% of the lesion is going to be devoid of pigment. And they're going to be in your blue-gray ovoid nests, your leaf-like structures and things in your features like that, versus your melanoma is going to have your melanoma-specific feature, your melanoma-specific features. So your atypical network, your atypical dots and globules, your blue-white veil, things like that. Other thing, ulceration. So 30% of basal cells ulcerate, 10% of melanomas ulcerate, less than 2% of benign melanocytic lesions ulcerate, and certainly not without trauma. So it can be a helpful clue to differentiate. It's not like it never happens in melanoma, but it happens much earlier in basal cell carcinoma, and when the lesion is much smaller versus melanoma, it tends to be much thicker and much larger when it starts to ulcerate. All right, so let's test your knowledge here. Which one is the melanoma? All right, so 75% said A, and that's correct. So in B, you're seeing your arborizing vessels. So you're seeing your arborizing vessels here. This looks black, but it's ulceration, so there's a little bit of red. So that's ulceration right here, which is, again, a clue for your basal cell carcinoma. You see these globules, your May globules here, right? So this is a pigmented basal cell carcinoma. Your melanoma, you're seeing almost like a milky red area here. You clearly have atypical pigment network. You have your off-center blotch down here. So that's your melanoma. How about this one? Oh, which one's your basal cell? We'll go which one's your melanoma. I tricked you. All right, absolutely. So this is your melanoma, right? Over here, A. So here's your basal cell carcinoma, here's your melanoma. Your melanoma has atypical pigment network, shiny white lines, multiple melanoma-specific features. All right, so the last little bit of time we're gonna go over facial pigmented lesions, which I think can be really challenging. And even someone who has put a lot of effort into learning dermoscopy, I still find these incredibly challenging. So this is an 85-year-old man. He has a brown spot on his nose. He says that it's been there for a long time. It certainly doesn't bother him. Clinically, it's like it looks okay. What caught my eye really was the size of it. It's really large, took up most of his nasal dorsum and went on to both of his nasal sidewalls. And so you go ahead and you stick your scope on it. And we're going to spend the end of this lecture going over what features you see and why a biopsy was ultimately done. And before we delve further into that case, I think it's really, really important to understand that pigment on the face looks different from pigment on the body. So true pigment network, which is what you see on the body, is due to melanin, either within melanocytes or keratinocytes, that are along the dermal-epidermal junction, where the network lines correspond to these reedy ridges, and the network holes correspond to the suprapapillary plates. When you have pigment on the face, you have effacement of those reedy ridges. So pigment along the dermal-epidermal junction is just gonna look like diffuse brown pigmentation. You get this pseudo-network because you have follicular openings and eccrine ostia that pop up through this diffuse brown pigmentation and lead to what we call a pseudo-network. Unfortunately, a pseudo-network can be found in all pigmented lesions on the face, so you need other criteria to help differentiate it. So when I think of a flat pigmented lesion on the face, what comes to my mind is a lentigo maligna melanoma, so a melanoma on sun-damaged skin, a pigmented actinic keratosis, and a flat seborrheic keratosis or solar lentigo, right? And so criteria for lentigo maligna have been described for a long time, from how it starts to how it progresses. It starts with these globules or these increase in melanocytes around the hair follicle, leading to these gray dots and globules. If you have a gray dot smack dab within a follicle, and then you have a circle around it, it's called a circle within a circle, or the isobar sign. That's the first indication or clinical clue for lentigo maligna. As the lentigo maligna starts to progress and you get increased proliferation of melanocytes, those dots and globules start to connect and you get these angulated lines or rhomboid structures, and we'll show you that. And then ultimately you have complete obliteration of hair follicles and you start to see more of your melanoma-specific features. Now, when all four of these are within the same lesion, it has a high positive predictive value for lentigo maligna. But each one individually can be seen in those other two differentials. So you really, it can become really challenging, especially when lentigo maligna is early. What I do think is important to understand is lentigo maligna is really a tumor of proliferation of melanocytes around the hair follicle. So all of the dermoscopic criteria, or all the dermoscopic features you're going to see is going to be surrounding that hair follicle, where the dermoscopic features of those other two are often within the interfollicular space, but they should preserve your hair follicles. You absolutely should never get obliteration of your hair follicles with the other two entities versus lentigo maligna, which ultimately will obliterate your hair follicles. So those are going to be your follicular openings, right? In your pseudo network, you're going to start seeing disappearance of those follicular openings. So even with those dermoscopic criteria, it still is really, really challenging clinically and dermoscopically to differentiate these two. It's easy, again, when someone comes in and you're like, I'm going to biopsy that no matter what. You stick your dermatoscope on it, you see these classic melanoma-specific features, but ultimately you probably were just going to biopsy that anyway. But it becomes more challenging when a patient comes in like this, who has had multiple lentigo maligna. It's not when you're going to find one, it's if and where you're going to find one, right? How can you tell that the lesion under this eye, that's the one you need to target? It can be really, really challenging. And because it's challenging to diagnose, this was a group who developed what we call the inverse approach, which we're going to review today. And it focuses instead on trying to diagnose lentigo maligna, it focuses on trying to rule out the other two, right? And this isn't new. There's a bunch of different algorithms that try to rule out things in order to get to your final diagnosis. But what they found is when you're looking at these three entities, without any training, your ability to diagnose it is around 50%. And when you add training of the features of lentigo maligna that we just reviewed, it increases it marginally, but not a lot. But this inverse approach really increased the sensitivity of being able to detect lentigo maligna without compromising specificity, which was still around 89%. So what they said is they looked at six features, three of which correspond to actinic keratoses, and three of which correspond to solar lentigo or flat seborrheic keratoses. There's a lot of overlap between the two. And so for actinic keratoses, they looked at scale, they looked at erythema, and they looked at white and wide follicles. And then for seborrheic keratoses, a reticular or parallel lines, your sharp demarcated borders, and your classic seborrheic keratoses criteria, so your comedo-like openings, your milia-like cysts, your sulci, and your gyri. So we're going to review those. What's really important to understand is that those features, if you have any one of those features, they have to be prevalent and predominant in order to be confident in the diagnosis. It can't just be one side of the lesion. It has to really be throughout, all right? So let's review those. So scale. So scale is going to, your clinical exam is going to help you with scale. You run your finger over it, it's going to be rough. Sometimes it can be clinically hard to diagnose scale. And when it's thin, dermoscopy, it can be a little bit subtle as well. So make sure you're always running your hand over the lesion. But scale, you see it as, all right, we're not going back, we're moving forward. All right, so scale is going to be this white-yellow feature in the center of the lesion here. Again, it's going to be rough, so scale. White and wide follicles, this histologically is keratin that's filling your osteo or your follicular units. When it's on non-polarized dermoscopy, you're going to see white and wide follicles. So this, instead of obliteration of the follicles, they're going to be wide, and they're going to be very, very prominent. Right? So you see your white and wide follicles. When you look at it with polarized dermoscopy, sometimes you can see these rosettes, which we've talked about before. So these are four dots in a square. They look like a four-leaf clover to me. I think it's one of the most pretty things on dermoscopy. Again, not totally specific for actinic keratoses and squamous cell carcinoma, but if they're prevalent throughout the lesion, this paper found that it has a high sensitivity for detecting lentigo maligna. So this is representative of an actinic keratosis. So here are your rosettes. Erythema throughout the entire lesion, right? So in actinic keratosis, it's a pre-cancer. So you have some atypia in the epidermis, but it's not full thickness. And I think of it, there's always a spectrum between actinic keratoses and seborrheic keratoses, and actinic keratoses and squamous cell carcinoma, excuse me. And the vessels are going to start to become more developed as you progress towards squamous cell carcinoma. Versus actinic keratoses, it's an early lesion, you're going to see just more straight erythema, right? So erythema throughout the entire lesion is suggestive of an actinic keratosis. Here's another example of erythema. Reticular lines, reticular or parallel lines. So here's an example of reticular lines throughout the entire lesion, a little bit lighter on this side, but it's still there. Again, look at these follicles. They're well preserved, right, throughout the lesion. A lot of what's happening is in the interfollicular space and not necessarily all around the follicles. Here's an example of your parallel line pattern. Looks like you've taken your finger and finger paint and stuck it on a paper, right? Your parallel lines, indicative of a flat seborrheic keratosis or a solar lentigo. I'm going to remind you of our key point that things have to be prevalent, right? So this is a lesion. You look at it under the dermatoscope, and you see part of it. You're like, okay, well, that's a reticular pattern, right? But the rest of the lesion looks nothing like it should, right? So you still need to, it needs to be prevalent and predominant in order for it to be okay. And so this was an invasive melanoma. Well-demarcated borders. So where you have a clear stop of the lesion and start of the background skin, classic for seborrheic keratoses and solar lentigo. Again, your well-defined borders here. Your classic seborrheic keratosis criteria, so we've reviewed those, your milia-like cysts, your comedo-like openings, your well-defined borders, your sulci and your gyri. Here's a great example of comedo-like cysts, and almost looks like the undulating nature of a brain, your classic seborrheic keratosis criteria. So knowing that, let's go ahead and look at our case again, right? So you have this lesion, you look at it under dermoscopy. Let's run this through the inverse algorithm. So do we see scale? So he's a little dry, right? But you don't see frank scale. It's certainly not rough on clinical exam. So there's no scale. White and wide follicles. So the follicles here are not white at all. You can see that there's some that are just, they're much smaller than others. They're different shapes throughout the lesion. So no white or wide follicles. Erythema. So the patient has background erythema to his skin, that's normal, but there's not increased erythema, and it's certainly not throughout the entire lesion. Remember, we need it to be prevalent and predominant. Reticular and parallel lines. Are we seeing that? No, right? So your lines here are really around your follicles. So you're not seeing a lot of any sort of reticular pattern in the interfollicular space. It's uneven, it's disorganized. Well-demarcated borders. Fuzzy borders. It's hard to tell where the lesion starts and stops, right? Especially down here. This is why lentigo maligna can be really hard to clear surgically. It takes much more than 5 millimeters, studies have shown, in order to clear this tumor. And that's because clinically, it's really hard to tell where it stops. Classic seborrheic keratoses. You're not seeing any sort of comedo-like openings, no milia-like cysts. It doesn't look like a brain. None of that. So you biopsy it, right? Superficially invasive melanoma. This is a great example of your angulated or rhomboid structures here, right? As you start to connect these dots, it looks geometric in shape. A lot of these are surrounding your hair follicles. This can be a helpful chart, but I think this entity, pigmented lesions on your face, are extremely, extremely challenging, even with the inverse method, in order to really diagnose. I think the inverse method is very helpful, but it's practice, practice, practice. And it's not like you're never going to biopsy a benign lesion again, right? That's not what dermoscopy is for. Dermoscopy is to decrease the number of benign lesions you biopsy in order to get a malignancy. But if you're only biopsying malignant lesions, then you're definitely missing something, right? So to differentiate actinic keratoses, lentigo malignant, and seborrheic keratoses or solar lentigo, actinic keratoses tend to have more erythema and scale. Your lentigo malignant are going to have these pigmented structures that are centered around your follicle. So you're going to get these rhomboid or angulated lines around your hair follicle. Your seborrheic keratoses have those classic reticular lines or parallel lines. It can be helpful if the lesion has a strawberry pattern, so that's where they have the white and wide follicles with the erythema in the background. And then the borders of a lentigo maligna are much more fuzzy compared to a solar lentigo or a seborrheic keratoses. But I will say, this is one of the most challenging differentials to diagnose both clinically and dermoscopically. All right, that's all I got for that lecture. I'm happy to take any questions. I want to thank the SDPA for inviting me to speak today. And thank you guys for staying here late in the afternoon listening.